It's time for Forward Nation Radio. Now here he is, the host of Forward Nation Radio, David Leventhal.
Good afternoon and welcome to Forward Nation Radio with me, David Leventhal. Thank you for joining us as always. Special show for you today in light of President Trump. And I really have to keep saying that. In light of President Trump's recent decision regarding DACA, or Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, we're going to have a special show and a special guest to talk about Trump's decision on DACA and what it means. We will continue our tax discussion next week, so you have that to look forward to. Okay, starting with the news. The two easiest questions you could ever be asked on a job interview, these are questions that you're sitting there saying, boy, I hope they ask me a real easy one like that one. I could do real well with that one. First question, do you have values? Does your boss have values? Especially if your boss is the president of the United States. If someone asks you, does your boss have values? This should be an easy one. Now, I'm no diplomat, but it seems to me that diplomats should be able to answer that question like it's a softball right down the center of the plate. Particularly, for instance, the nation's number one diplomat, the Secretary of State. Now, I understand that when it's President Trump that they're asking about, this becomes a more difficult question. A president who has evidenced so clearly that he does not have any values. Most recently, with the Department of Justice, just this week, confirming, sit down, this is going to blow your mind, that Obama did not actually wiretap candidate Donald Trump. Who could have seen that one coming? But still, as the nation's top diplomat, you're supposed to be, what's the word? Diplomatic. You should be able to answer questions like, does the president of the United States have values, without any problem? Things like, the president cares deeply about people. Or even equivocation. You should be good at equivocation if you're a diplomat. As in, stop asking me embarrassing questions like that. That's beneath you to be asking a gotcha question. But you should be able to do better than the president speaks for himself. Okay, second easy question that you want to get asked on a job interview. How do you feel about Nazis? This is an easy one for most of us. Correct answer, something along the lines of, don't like them. Bad. Not equivocation on that one. Not, well, I like to see good in all people. There's good on all sides. Okay, so why is the incompetence of the supposed diplomats in the Trump administration relevant? Well, I've been asked several times over the last couple of days, what the hell's happening with North Korea and how is this going to end? And I start off by saying I don't consider myself a foreign policy expert. In fact, I would say that I probably don't know a lot more about the North Korea situation than, let's say, the President of the United States. At least I know the name of the North Korean leader. I expect that Trump does now. But if he does, he's learned it in the last couple of weeks. But what we've seen is the importance of diplomacy, the importance of making friends to get what you want in the world. The fact that a man who grew up getting whatever he wants and intimidating people, and it may have gotten to a point where that doesn't work anymore, where surrendering leadership of the free world is actually a problem for America, because we need cooperation. We need other countries to help us deal with the North Korea crisis. And to a large extent, you certainly get the sense that some countries, such as China, are perfectly happy to basically say, fuck you. You've been trashing us for all these months. You use us as a whipping boy. Now you want something from us? Not going to work that way. This is why you want adult, thoughtful, reasonable, diplomatic people running the country. Speaking of thoughtful, reasonable, diplomatic people running the country, Hurricane Harvey winding down. Hurricane Irma gearing up and hitting us as we speak. Once again, as we discussed last week, indications of the need for government. Not just government to spend money on disaster relief. It's nice to see the Texas congressional delegation that was trying to withhold funds for Hurricane Sandy relief, at least understanding the role of government and sticking their hands out for government disaster relief. But government's not just about providing money. That's what your parents are for. Government is supposed to be about more than just paychecks, than just writing a check. And we're seeing that in the aftermath of Harvey. How the EPA has been basically absent as Harvey winds down, as the cleanup proceeds. The EPA, it turns out, would be helpful if it were being run by competent, caring people who cared about the mission of the EPA. Not just the EPA dealing with cleaning up the mess, but we're also learning how important it is for the EPA to pass regulations before the fact, so we can avoid some of the cleanup after the fact. For instance, passing regulations and enforcing regulations on the storage of chemicals in flood zones that might explode in the event of a flood. Chemicals that might poison people and make the disaster so much worse than it already is for people. Coming beforehand to pass regulations to prevent it from getting as bad as it was and then cleaning up afterwards. That's the role of government. Government helps people and helps to save lives. It might be wonderful if people can engage in hurricane relief at night. But if they can do so because they all glow in the dark because of the chemicals they've been exposed to, this is not a positive thing. We also see the impact and consider government's role with respect to war profiteering. Understand, this will relate to our tax discussion from last week and for next week. People get rich off of other people's suffering. Maybe it's inevitable. But maybe government could have a role in making sure that people do not get rich as a result of the cleanup effort or the problems that Hurricane Harvey caused. There's something problematic. See, there's something that doesn't seem right about people getting rich because of other people's suffering and, in many cases, death. A competent government that cared about promoting competent government, good government, and doing the right thing for the people of this country would be considering things like cost-plus contracts for cleanup, things that will reduce the amount of profit that people could be making. Anybody expect that from the Trump administration? Speaking of war profiteering, the Red Cross. There's been a lot of criticism of the Red Cross and its actions, and how much of the Red Cross's relief efforts go to funding the Red Cross and things that don't involve relief. Look into where your contributions would be best spent. This issue of the Red Cross gives me an opportunity to talk about a reasoning fallacy that we've discussed previously on this show and will continue to discuss because of their prevalence. The other day I'm listening to a news report and the vice president for disaster relief for the Red Cross is being interviewed. He's asked, given all the discussion about how much money the Red Cross seems to be wasting, how much of each dollar donated to the Red Cross is actually spent on disaster relief, on relief of Hurricane Harvey. And his response is that 91 cents of every dollar spent by the Red Cross is spent on actual relief. This is why intelligent people listen to intelligent newscasts, in this case, NPR. The interviewer wasn't buying it and said, "That's not quite the question I asked you. I didn't ask you how much of your spending is spent on hurricane relief. I asked you how much of your donations are spent on hurricane relief." This is a classic example of equivocation. Have a question you don't want to answer. When she repeated the question and pointed out the equivocation, the vice president for disaster relief for Red Cross, who was quick with the number of 91 cents for every dollar we spend, said, "Oh, I don't have those numbers. I don't know what those numbers are. That wasn't given to me before I came on these shows." Interesting. Okay, Russia, never too far from the news. In a story that is underreported, it turns out that we now know that Russia has interfered in the election. We still don't know that they've changed any votes. No evidence of that, at least as of yet. But information continues to pour out about how Russian hacking prevented people from voting, how it messed with the voter rolls, how people showed up to vote and were then sent to a different polling station and then ultimately told, I'm sorry, there's a problem and you don't get to vote. In the wake of an election where people say, wow, this jackass is president of the United States, in large part because the Obama voters did not come out to vote in the kind of numbers that they did when Obama was running, this may explain why some of the people did not come out. Maybe they did come out. Maybe they didn't just get to vote. This points out, again, the way media works, the way deception works in this country. I look at this and I think of the Fox News article that was pointed out a week or two ago, entitled, Would You Care If He's Guilty? About the Russian election. Gosh, things are good in America. Who cares if he's a crook, if he's a Russian spy, if he's a traitor? Why should you care? Because you can imagine that if the shoe was on the other foot, Fox News would be saying the same thing. I mean, Fox News, I'm sure, didn't make an issue at all of Hillary Clinton, for instance, taking a work home with her. So this, why would you care? Things are going well. By the way, also keep this attitude in mind for our later discussions about DACA. When we talk about children who came to America, grew up in America, consider themselves American, have worked hard pursuing the American dream, and who now Fox News, I'm sure, plenty of people on Fox News are saying they broke the law, they need to be thrown out of the country. But when it comes to a Russian spy, come on, he's one of our guys. Why should we care? This is where we've been going for a long time with these Nazi illusions with the President of the United States. I'm not saying that President Trump is going to start the another Holocaust. I certainly hope not. But we talk about tools used by the Nazis that unfortunately are being used today by the Trump administration, have been used for some time by the Republican Party. The promotion of bigotry, red meat to their bigoted base. Subterfuge for those who may be turned off by that bigotry, as evidenced most recently with DACA. The propaganda, the bullshit that comes out of Fox News. As long as the criminals are on our side, don't worry about the criminality. Recent report by Bloomberg News on Jared Kushner and the Kushner's family's financial troubles. Apparently, they are in a lot of trouble with a lot of debts that they are really having a hard time paying and may not be able to pay. This is just the kind of thing that makes people wonder about the Russia connection. This is just the kind of thing that makes you subject to blackmail or bribery or, as the Russians say, compromise. And that apparently they're very good at. The United States Supreme Court is soon to hear, in less than a month, a case on gerrymandering. We have talked about gerrymandering on the show. Gerrymandering is the drawing, the partisan drawing of congressional boundaries, such that basically we don't have democracy anymore in America. Very few congressional elections are actually contested because the boundaries are drawn by a political party not to ensure voter representation and democracy, but in fact to do the exact opposite. To ensure that democracy is taken away from the average voter, and instead, lines are drawn to maximize political power. We've talked on this show before about how in 2012 in Wisconsin, where this case is coming from, Republicans received 47% of the vote statewide. But as a result of partisan redistricting, got 60 out of 99 assembly seats. It's being reported that the takeover of the House of Representatives, which many of us think is pretty important in 2018, to put a check on Republicans, if the Republicans ever get their act together on Republican power. The Democrats need to win by more than 6%. If the voting for congressional seats, Democrats win by 4%, it's expected that the Republicans will easily keep the House of Representatives. This is because of districting. Well, just this week in the Supreme Court case, Republicans came out with a brief supporting the lawsuit trying to strike down partisan gerrymandering, including, shout out again, John McCain, John Kasich, Bob Dole, other Republican leaders or former leaders, came out with a brief that said in part, partisan gerrymandering has become a tool for powerful interests to distort the democratic process. To which the entire Republican establishment, all of whom oppose the lawsuit, said, yeah, so what? Do you understand we're winning? That's the important thing here. We're winning. Who cares if 40 out of 435 congressional seats were actually contested in the last election? The important thing is we have districted our way to close to a permanent majority. The other thing I want to point out here is the importance of the stolen Supreme Court pick, which I have been railing about on this show for many weeks since we started, since our very first show, because this is an issue that is extremely important to me. The Republicans stole a Supreme Court seat. As a result, the outlook on this case is completely different than it otherwise would have been. You've got four ultra-conservative justices who will vote however the Republican Party wants them to vote. And then you've got Republican conservative Anthony Kennedy, who hopefully will sometimes say enough is enough when it gets too extreme, as opposed to a 5-4 moderate or liberal majority on the United States Supreme Court. Stay tuned for more on that case. Just today, hot off the presses, Donald Trump agreed to extend the debt ceiling for three more months, to increase the debt ceiling for three more months to avoid a government shutdown. Remember that just last week, it was Trump who was threatening a government shutdown if he doesn't get his wall built. We pointed out on this show how ironic it was that the people who've shut down the government the last few times were the ones that we were counting on to be cooler heads and to stop the government from shutting down. In other words, the Republicans. Well, in this case, interestingly, Donald Trump sided with Democrats in increasing the debt ceiling for 3 months, meaning that at the end of the year, we're going to have a fight over this one and a whole bunch of other things. As we've said before on this show, and many commentators have pointed out, Republicans are consistent in believing that our debt and our deficit are the two greatest issues confronting America, as long as there's a Democratic president. When there's a Republican president, who gives a crap about the debt ceiling? Who gives a crap about the deficit? In fact, it's perfect. Republicans will increase the deficit in large part by dramatically cutting taxes on rich people if they can. And when they finally get thrown out of office, hopefully in 2020, the Democrats are going to come in and the Republicans are going to say, sorry, we don't have any money for your agenda. Look at all the red ink we're facing. More on this as well. Earlier this week was the 40th anniversary of the launch of Voyager 1. I think that's exciting. I love science. The idea that we have launched a spacecraft that is now out of the solar system, traveling basically forever, will be broadcasting to us for another few years, but out of the solar system. 40 years ago, we launched two spacecraft, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2, that basically threaded the eye of a needle a couple hundred million miles away, and then went ahead and went another couple hundred more million miles and threaded another needle. It is absolutely mind-boggling. It is remarkable. Every now and then to consider what humans are capable of achieving is a remarkable thing. What science is capable of doing. And then to think of Trump voters, and to wonder if we really are all one species. On the one hand, we can launch spacecraft out of the solar system and learn things about planets hundreds and hundreds of millions of miles away. On the other hand, climate change can't be real because it's cold in January. This is what we're dealing with. It can't be the same species. Okay, the rest of the show, we're going to be talking about DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. Most of you, I'm sure, have already heard that Donald Trump said that he is ending Barack Obama's policy. He's ending DACA, but he is given a six-month window to allow Congress to do something about it. This is a policy whereby people who grew up playing by the rules in America but didn't happen to be born here don't have to fear being deported, don't have to fear their families being broken up, get to participate in our society, get to engage in hurricane relief and helping others without worrying about being thrown out of the country as a result. So what's going to happen? Trump has indicated that he wants Congress to do something, and maybe if they don't come up with something, maybe he'll figure out a way to extend it. And there are some rationales to say, if we had a reasonable country, a reasonable president, a reasonable Congress, that this is an important decision that should be made by the entire federal government, not just by the president. But it had to be made by Obama because her Congress has been dysfunctional for probably, listener, most if not all of your lifetime. And to get to a point where we are ruining people's lives and saying, well, it's not my fault, I don't know, we just, you know, we weren't able to get it together, we weren't getting anything done, is probably not acceptable to most of us. This once again points out that maybe the biggest difference between the left and the right in this country is empathy. We have a huge empathy gap. I'm not sure many people on the right are capable of feeling empathy, concern for others, able to put themselves in other people's shoes, except perhaps for wealthy white billionaires. Okay, we'll be back in a moment with our special guest to talk about DACA. Welcome back to Forward Nation and our very special guest, Queens College honor student, esteemed member of the Forward Nation Radio staff right here at home, activist who has written about DACA, Mariana Arias-Patino. Mariana, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
This issue is very personal to you. Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background?
So my family brought me over from Colombia when I was only 2 years old, and I grew up in the United States. I went to school in the United States. This is where I grew up, and my family worked really hard to get me where I am today. And when DACA was presented in 2012, it was a whole new opportunity that opened a dozen of other opportunities for people that just like me that are dreamers that were brought to the United States at a young age. And with DACA, I'm able to work. I'm able to go to school because of scholarships. And I'm also able to build a life for myself and have a better quality of life.
So DACA has opened up all these opportunities to you. You now, your status, you've moved on. You've described yourself as advanced parole. Why don't you tell me a little bit about what that means?
Advanced parole is a travel document, basically, that can be obtained through DACA or while you're waiting for your green card decision, and it allows people to travel abroad and come back to the United States.
Before that, before DACA, no working, no school, at least as far as getting any money to help you, which makes it affordable.
Yeah.
No travel.
No travel.
And this has opened up all those things. This is, obviously, this isn't just your experience. This is commonplace. This is the experience of the average. What you describe, I learned a new term, the DACAmented, to refer to DACA recipients. So it's opened up all these opportunities for you. We were talking before about the myth that you'd sort of like to dispel for people when it comes to the DACAmented.
Yeah. So dreamers and DACAmented people, we consider ourselves Americans. Of course, we have our cultural backgrounds and what our families have taught us, because most of us can't experience it firsthand. We're just told by our families what our culture is. But we are Americans, just not on paper. That's the only difference. We don't have the documentation to prove we are Americans, but we go to school here, we work here, we live here. We consider ourselves Americans.
I find it remarkable when we're talking. You are a full-time student. You are an honors student. You work, you said, 20 hours a week. Mm-hmm. And that's not counting what you're doing for Forward Nation Radio, right? We left that part out. And this, you said, is typical. I mean, this is what people who are documented are needing to do. Mm-hmm. Well, it's presumably just the kind of people that we are looking to fill our society. Yeah. That you are hardworking, industrious, etc. And DACA allows you to do that. Mm-hmm. What has been the DACA community's reaction to the Trump pronouncement?
Well, after the announcement, I was watching the news, and a lot of people that were being interviewed were really scared because, you know, we trusted the system. We put ourselves out there and we gave our information to the government because we believed, or it was to help us in the first place. But now that there's a possibility of that being taken away, a lot of people are scared that they could be deported if DACA is revoked, because we have no security after DACA. DACA is our sense of security. But there's another part of the community that is taking this chance to have their voices be heard louder than ever. And, you know, I agree with that. I think this is the time to know your rights fully, know that DACA is still in place, and that we should be, this should be seen as a call for action and not as something to put you back into your homes, to put you back into the shadows. DACA helped us come out of the shadows, and now that we're already in the system, I think we should be louder than ever right now.
I think that's a remarkable statement we were talking before that I learned. That because of DACA, people came out of the closet, and they put themselves in places where they will be much easier to be found if DACA is taken away, mm-hmm. that you are now exposed. I suppose you sort of indicate, ironically, that gives people more of a reason to be active and speak out. I guess, in some respect, for a lot of people, there's less concern that this is going to out them, because in a sense, they've already been outed. They've outed themselves.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems remarkable. Is there sort of a feeling of almost betrayal?
There is, you know, like I said, we trusted the system, and now it feels like it can be all taken away, and like our fate is in the hands of Congress right now. The fate of 800,000 documented people is in the fate of Congress, and it feels like we're in the air right now. Like, we have nothing to hold on to. Really, the only thing we're holding on to right now is the fact that DACA is still in place, and that we have strong community ties. That's really important. We have immigration organizations, multiple immigration attorneys that are willing to help allies. And I feel like that's also very important, the strong sense of community that we all have. And I think it's also because we share the same values of being hardworking, of being studious. Like, all these things that we were taught as kids is what brings us together and makes us a strong community that will have their voices heard.
Does any of this change right now because of what Trump has done? Does it change yet? Do people's behavior change? Do people act differently? Or is it more everyone's on the edge of their seat and on hold?
Well, for the time being, DACA is still in place, and you know, you should know that an employer cannot fire you if just because DACA might be revoked. You can't be fired until the expiration date on your worker's permit. So we will continue working. We will continue going to school and doing everything DACA allows us to do. But we have to be doing more than that. You know, we have to be voicing our concerns, voicing our discontent. But for now, DACA is in place. Although, you know, you can't apply for DACA anymore, but since we have it already, we should be fighting for it and fighting so that more people can have it in the future.
Are you happy with what you've seen so far with the fighting? Are you seeing a lot of reaction to this? Are people reacting the way you want them to react?
Yeah, I've seen so many protests on TV, and I've been invited to so many protests over Facebook. Like, I'm just really excited to get out there. And because when you're out there with other DACA recipients, you know you come from similar backgrounds, and that really gives you, like, a push to continue going to school, going to work. And yeah.
What have you heard, if anything, from Queens College about this? About the foundation that's providing you with money to pursue your education?
So I'm part of the Dream US scholarship, and they provide, they pay the tuition fees, and they provide a stipend for Dreamers. And they have said that they will continue funding tuition regardless of DACA status, which I thought was amazing because, you know, it shows that DACA is more than a status. It's become like a way of thinking, a way of being. Like, we value hardworking, we value education, and I believe this foundation also believes the same.
So you're getting encouragement at this point. How do things change for people if Trump goes ahead, if Congress doesn't act, if Trump goes ahead and repeals this in 6 months, this thing goes away in 6 months?
Well, I feel many people are afraid of that, and many people who have good reason to doubt Donald Trump believe that that is a likely possibility. And I would say to those people that, you know, right now that's all really unsure, you know, that no one can tell you that you're going to be deported in 6 months because no one really knows that. The only thing we can do right now is voice our true feelings. You know, we have to let others know who we are, we're staying here, and that DACA is a great asset to the community. And, you know, I don't think you should be afraid of deportation right now. I think you should worry about being here right now, being present, and building the community that we're working so hard to build.
You mentioned lack of trust in Trump. I can't imagine where that could come from. But do you get a sense from the community? I assume, obviously, that the reactions are all over the map. But is there a hopefulness that maybe he means what he kind of indicated, that he's hoping Congress will pass a law and it'll get sorted out? Or is there, you know, is there optimism? Is there pessimism? I guess there's a little of both. But
I really see a lot of optimism coming from older immigrants, so like parents or grandparents who tell the young Dreamers, like, don't worry, everything will sort itself out, you know? This is just another obstacle that we as immigrants have had to face in our lives. And we're so accustomed to facing obstacles like this one that I feel like it's sort of like their nature to tell us, you know, everything's going to be okay, you know, trust in this country we're in, this country we came for a better opportunity, and you won't be let down. But I also sense a lot of pessimism from the younger community, from younger immigrants who really don't trust the Trump administration and feel that there's a great possibility that DACA will be revoked. And that also comes with the fact that our trust was broken.
I just want to emphasize something, that if it were to happen, and you're fortunately not worried that you're quite in that position given your status as advanced parole, but if someone like you were, if this were to lapse, someone documented, you would be sent back to Colombia.
Maybe, presumably. That's a possibility, yeah.
And I just want to, since you came here at 2 years old, you've been to Colombia how often?
I haven't been able to go back.
Okay, so you really don't know, you have no familiarity with the country.
I don't.
It's that this is your, United States is your country.
I just know what my parents have told me about Colombia, and I have grown to love the country and my culture, but I really don't know it firsthand, and I've never experienced it. I just know it from anecdotes from my family members.
Okay, you talked a little bit about this, so I want to be clear. How is the immigrant community responding to Tuesday's decision? Are you happy with it?
We're not happy with it. We are a lot of...
Well, I mean, the reaction.
Yeah, well, a lot of people are afraid. Like I said, a lot of people are afraid of deportation. But other people are going out to the streets, voicing their concerns. They're calling their congressmen and women, letting them know that they're not happy with the decision that was made. And I also saw on TV that a lot of Dreamers are, you know, risking being arrested and, you know, stopping traffic. And, you know, they really want to be heard. And I feel like that's very important, that now that we're out of the shadows, our voices should be louder than ever.
Okay, so what, to finish up, what can we do? What are you asking people to do, both for the documented and for those of us who want to support the community?
So as Dreamers or as allies, I think you should go out to the streets, you know, scream as loud as you can, defend DACA and defend Dreamers, defend the documented, and not only them, but also their families, because families could be torn apart because of this decision. And also, you know, contact your congressmen and women, let them know that you're unhappy with this decision. You can contact immigration lawyers or immigration organizations, and maybe you're eligible to apply for a green card, and you can do that while you still can. Basically, this is the time to know your rights fully, speak to people or organizations that can help you if you have any questions about your status or any legal proceedings you have to do, and also give each other support, because this is a time where we all need to be supporting each other as a community.
Mariana, thank you for putting a human face on an inherently human issue. For our listeners, we have been already putting up information as to how you can get involved in promoting and protecting the interests of, yes, our fellow citizens, in deed, if not in name, and promoting some of the most productive and should be welcome members of our society. Please check out our website for more information. Please find out protests near you. This is a time to be heard. It's important to note Congress is going to be dithering over this for 6 months, and there is no question they're going to be counting the emails. We saw how people's reaction matters in the healthcare debate. This is a good time for people to be kicking and screaming and yelling loudly and saying we're all on board and we want this to end with a positive result for everybody. So please do check out our activism tabs and our spots on Forward Nation Radio. Thanks again for joining us. Thank you all at home for joining us. As always, I got to get the part out I need to read. Like Looking Forward, go to forwardnationradio.com. That's forwardnationradio.com, and get the full experience. You'll see the video from this and every episode there and on our YouTube channel as well. In this case, you will see information about getting involved and being active. Don't miss the next Forward Nation Radio podcast on Podbean at podbean.com. If you love what you heard, like what you heard, or even can tolerate what you heard, please like us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Tell your friends, spread the word, Forward Nation Radio. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to Forward Nation Radio with David Leventhal.